your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Tuesday, May 27, 2025, as we record this special edition show. The Chicago White Sox continue their series against the New York Mets, but we are roughly 6 weeks away from the MLB draft, and conference tournament play has already wrapped up for college baseball. Now it's time for regional action, and that starts this upcoming weekend. The following weekend will be super regionals, and then the attention is drawn to Omaha for the College World Series. Great opportunity for Major League Baseball teams to get good looks at college talent, especially if they need targets still for after the third round, maybe even targeting some seniors to help out with the bonus pool game. On this podcast page, I'll have a list of players for each region to follow. I am asking for your help. It's a lot of baseball for one person to keep track of everything this upcoming weekend. If you see a draft eligible player that you really like, post in the comment section. That way we can start collecting names that the White Sox could target. Join us to help preview the NCAA postseason play and talk some 2025 MLB draft as a friend of the show. You've heard him call college baseball games on the ESPN family of networks, as he was just calling games for the ACC tournament. He's also got shows on SiriusXM with MLB Network, Power Alley on Channel 89, and College Sports XM on Channel 84. It's Mike Farron. Mike, long time since we've chatted on the show back in the winter meetings in Dallas.
Yeah.
But thanks for coming back on the Sox Machine podcast.
Always my pleasure. As a loyal Sox Machine subscriber, it's great to see that everybody's money is going to poor use by having me on.
Do you know which region you'll be calling?
I'll be in Athens. I'll be in Athens. I guess it's whatever the baseball equivalent of Between the Hedges is. So Foley Field, Georgia, Duke, Oklahoma State, and Binghamton. Foley Field is one of the more homer-friendly environments in college sports, and three of the top 40 home run teams in the country are there, and Binghamton is 80th. So, like, you basically have four teams in the top quarter of team home runs that are going to be there, which means we'll probably have a lot of 1-0 games.
Probably.
I love squeeze plays.
Yeah. Well, let's start the conversation about the college baseball season. How do you feel about the college, especially as far as the college prospects going into the 2025 MLB draft? In my top 100, and I've been writing about this all season long, Mike, I felt like the pitchers were ahead of the hitters, especially the top of the class. Do you feel the same, or just what are your overall feelings about the draft eligible players?
I mean, I think first and foremost, it's not nearly as deep a college class as we've seen the two previous years. So it's there's going to be a lot more variability at the top. It's just not the best class of college bats. College arms, I agree. They're not bad. I mean, there's not a Chase Burns in the mix, right? There's not that like elite guy at the front. There's definitely not a Paul Skenes, but there's decent depth in it. You know, really the strength of this draft class, I think, is going to be the prep bats when all is said and done. But it's not as exciting a group. And players who had warts coming into the year didn't do a ton to answer them, or to have the warts removed, I guess. And so it's left for a very muddled field. And every time I have a conversation with somebody that's in some sort of evaluative power with an organization, they're still kind of like, we've got 6 weeks to go. We have no idea what we're going to do. Like they just trying to make sense of this has not been easy because of the lack of impact.
Yeah. And they're going to have some competition with some of these top universities when it comes to NIL money and negotiations. High school players weren't cheap to begin with, Mike. They're definitely not going to be cheap this upcoming draft class.
Yeah, but although I will say that a lot of these guys that we're talking about with the draft, like when we're seeing the depth or the strength is the depth of the prep bats, those are guys that would go in the first round anyway. They're like, right. Ethan Holiday isn't going to Oklahoma State. Eli Willits isn't going to Oklahoma. Billy Carlson isn't going to Vanderbilt. Realistically, like, those guys are going off the board early, and it's a ton of middle infielders. Like, it's a really exciting group. And I had an assistant scouting director. We were talking almost about a month ago, and I was just kind of lamenting the college bats with him. And he goes, you know what? The thing is, we're going to look back on this, and it's going to be a pretty good draft class because of the prep bats.
Mm. Well, that could be good news for the White Sox with the 10th overall pick. Again, you can go to SoxMachine.com, take a look at the top 100, my updated watch board. There's some new names, and they are the prep bats that I'm looking at for the White Sox at pick number 10. But you have gotten a chance to watch one of the top starting pitchers from the college class in the last few weeks, and that's Jamie Arnold. So I'm riding the Peloton bike. I'm watching Jamie Arnold from Florida State. I'm hearing you. Tell us about Jamie Arnold with your up close and personal views the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, 6'1", kind of lower slot lefty with a drop and drive delivery, who, when his fastball is going well, plays really well at the top of the zone because of the angle he creates with it. It's a good fastball. It's more like 94, 95 than it is. You know, like, I think he's touched 98 this year, but it's not like he sits in that, you know, plus to plus plus territory. It's more, you know, I guess he gets a little bit of a boost because he's left-handed, but it's more closer to major league average. He's got a big sweeping breaking ball. It's a slider that has been a swing and miss and out pitch. When Arnold isn't going right, it's fastball command. This probably sounds like a broken record on just about every prospect, right? So, like, if he's not having trouble locating his fastball, then he will get hit around a little bit, although he still gets strikeouts because the slider is good enough. You know, like, just to compare it to the last few drafts, I don't think we're talking about him as the number one player in either of the last two classes. You know, I was talking to somebody about this, like, he probably would slot in kind of behind Hagen Smith a year ago, in that mix. And again, like, this is the guy that ESPN, my colleague Kylie McDaniel there, has as the number one player in the draft. So I think that just kind of tells you a little bit of the story of what this class is like. But he's very competitive, really good kid, super bright. He's a starter. I don't think that there's any doubt that he's a starter. I'm not sure what the ceiling is. And the changeup, while he has shown it this year, is a pitch that's going to need a lot of work. Whether it's that or something else, it's going to be a third pitch. He's tried to run a two-seamer some. He's cut the fastball some. I just really like it when he rears back and gets behind a four-seamer and goes. So I think he's a good bet for a good pitching program. You know, the last 2 weeks, I've been at both of his starts. Fastball command was off a little bit. He still punched bats, punched out guys, punched tickets. Like, he was good. But I think he's a guy that, you know, like, may not go in the top couple of names, but, you know, I don't think he'll be in play when the White Sox pick 10, right? So I don't think he'll be there then, but there's a chance that he's more in that 5 to 8 range than he is in the 1 to 5.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if St. Louis passes on Jamie Arnold with the 5th overall pick.
Yeah, he's a better version of Cooper Jerpy, who was their first rounder a couple years ago. So that's actually the comp that I have for him, is Jerpy. I like Arnold a lot better. I wasn't a great, like, Jerpy was super competitive. I think Arnold has a little bit less reliever risk, well, a lot less reliever risk to him. Again, I don't know what the ceiling is going to be, but I think he'll make it to the big leagues as a starter, and I think he'll be a starting pitcher in the big leagues.
Now, Jamie Arnold is a semifinalist both for the Golden Spikes and the Dick Houser Awards. These are the Player of the Year Awards for college baseball. I am a voter for the Dick Houser Award. So once we get closer to the College World Series, when they make that announcement, the NCBWA, the day before the College World Series starts, I'll release my ballot so you Sox Machine listeners and readers can see who I voted for that award. But, Mike, I have to be honest. I'm having difficulty right now finding, not necessarily finding 8 guys to fill out my ballot, but to decide and who should be the College Baseball Player of the Year. So as someone that has broadcasted games all season long, who would you pick to be College Baseball's Player of the Year?
I just want to shout out Cardell Thibodeau at Southern, who had an unbelievable season. He was a transfer from Louisiana Monroe. He won both the SWAC Player of the Year and the Newcomer of the Year award. Here's his line on the season. It's incredible. 439, 544, 847. That's a slash line. Highest OPS in the country, nearly 1,400. 18 homers, 71 stakes, 24 bags, and he walked a dozen times more than he struck out. Like, he had an unbelievable year. He is not going to win any of these awards. I don't think that there's been a player from the SWAC that's won. I want to see, did Ricky Weeks win the Golden Spikes Award when he was the number two overall pick?
Yes, he did.
Out of Southern, like he had, and he had a very similar year to Thibodeau. He hit, actually, I think Ricky hit like 480 that year. He had his sophomore year, I think he hit over 500. Like he had, Ricky Weeks, the SWAC is not the best conference. Ricky Weeks was the best player in the country. You can only imagine what the numbers looked like. But Cardell Thibodeau, I just want to shout him out because he's having a great year. He's not going to win. To me, it's Alex Lodis. That's the guy, the shortstop at Florida State. I think he's got to be the favorite for the Golden Spikes Award. I would think that he's in that mix for the Dick Houser Trophy as well. 17 homers, playing a solid shortstop every day on a national championship contender team, top 10 in batting average in the country, hitting 415. Yeah, he was the ACC Player of the Year. He's probably a late first, early second round pick. I'm not sure if he's a shortstop in pro ball, but he is really a very, very good offensive player. He hits the ball extremely hard. He's had this incredible year. And I think at least among the power conference guys, he's the guy that I would lean towards. I've kind of been felt like he was the presumptive Golden Spikes Award winner for like the last, I would say, 3 weeks or so. No, probably longer than that, maybe closer to 6 weeks. It's been a great season for him. And I think he's the guy that I would say has to be the favorite to win, you know, all or most of the Player of the Year awards.
That's a great pick, because watching him against Duke in that ACC tournament final, Mike, it is I don't want to say it's a violent swing. It's a very fast swing, but he swings with authority. Like, Lodis does not get cheated on his A swing, which is something that major league scouts are going to really appreciate, because that generates a type of exit velocity and the angle of attack that every scout is looking for. Now, the strikeouts is an issue, but I was recently told that there's no way that he's going to be on the board for the White Sox at pick 44 in the second round, that Lodis is someone that will be taking earlier than many are expecting. So it seems like firm first round for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll wait and see, because the scouts that I've talked to maybe aren't quite as enamored. I think because of some of the approach stuff, and I think some of the more data-driven teams are still going to end up favoring like Merrick Houston at Wake Forest over him. Houston doesn't have the same potential impact, but he controls the strike zone very well. He makes contact in zone a ton. He's got a great idea of the zone. He's going to play shortstop as a pro, whereas I think there's some concern the Lodis that have to move to third. Merrick Houston's a little bit like Griffo Farrell last year, who was a supplemental first rounder of the Orioles, who's a high contact, low power shortstop. Houston probably has a little bit more pop to him, but those swing decisions and the ability to stay at shortstop are probably going to drive him a little bit. Maybe Lodis goes towards the end of the first round. I could certainly see that being possible. The upside is significantly better, I think, because they're like, if he gets to it, like you're talking about a, you know, potentially 15 to 18 homer infielder with a non-zero chance of playing shortstop, but he swings a lot. He goes outside the strike zone a fair amount. And, you know, most of what teams are looking at are swing decisions, right? It's like, how do you do in the zone? How much contact do you make? How much do you swing at pitches outside the zone? All of these things, and like what's happening on swing decisions, are a big driving force beyond just how hard a guy hits it or what the power potential looks like. And just the guys who don't make contact or make the right swing decisions don't play in the big leagues, because the stuff for pitchers is way too good and too consistent.
Yeah, Jay Slaviette's going to have to answer a lot of those questions at the draft combine, if he attends the draft combine and conducts interviews.
He broke his hand and had to have surgery. So
I don't think he's going to participate, but I wonder if he would he do interviews? I don't know. That's
probably. I mean, he needs to do, like, he'd have to, if you go through the medical testing that goes with the combine, then you're guaranteed, what is it, 75% of slot or 80% of slot. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll go through some of that, but I don't think that there's like the issues with Laviolette coming into this year are the same ones that they are now in terms of swing decisions. He got off to a bad start. He was really pressing early in the year.
Yeah.
He's not as bad a player as he looked like in the non-conference schedule. He's also probably not a guy that should have been the number one overall player in this class coming into the year. I think he's got this kind of like classic right field build, and there is some explosion in his tools, but I don't think it's like, again, like we knew that the swing and miss was going to be a problem, and it didn't really get better this year. And so with him not being able to tighten that up, it leaves a lot more questions about him. That said, like, if it clicks, like this is, if you're looking for ceiling, like he's got ceiling because he has significant power and he's a really good athlete and a tough son of a gun. Like he got hit by a pitch from what was it, the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament. He fractured a knuckle on his left hand, had to come out of the game, had surgery on it, and talked his way into the lineup the next day and didn't just play, but he knocked in two of the three runs that they scored in their loss. Like, He played through a nasty hamstring injury in Omaha last year because the dude just wants to play. And like that, I really appreciate about him. Like, I don't think you can question Jace Laviolette's makeup at all. Like,
no,
that's a significant amount of toughness.
Just a strikeout rate and the strikeout rate contact rate.
Yeah. And those are big questions.
They are big questions. And Laviolette, I've been told, is on the White Sox radar at pick 10. We'll see what happens. We're still a few weeks away from the MLB draft. But things are going to change here. And to Mike's point, with teams so uncertain, maybe minds could be changed. Or readers and listeners, we're going to start discovering more guys that could be targets for the White Sox after the second round, your third through 10th rounds, your bonus rounds. Watching what happens during postseason play. And when we're looking at the regionals, Mike, you mentioned that you're going to be in Athens. That's a very intriguing region to me. Georgia does not have an easy route despite playing these games at home. And a reminder, if you don't know how the format works, it's 16 regionals. They're all played in one site. So that's why the number one seeds is really important, because they get to host these games and play in front of their home crowd. Now, that doesn't mean that all 16 number one seeds move on to the super regionals. We've seen a lot of upsets, especially last year. But when we look at the brackets and how it all came together, Mike, how do you feel about the regionals? Is there any seeding or any host that you think is a little bit out of line, or maybe someone that you're surprised, a school that's not a host?
No, you know, we've been talking a lot about this the last couple of days, and like really the committee did a very good job this year. I mean, if you want to quibble with one or two of the picks, or one of the picks maybe at the back end, like UConn really felt like a team that could have gotten in as an at-large. And I just, like, I don't love the optics of Kentucky being in at 13 and 17 in the SEC. And I get that it's the best conference, but they got 13 teams in, and Kentucky wasn't even on the board as one of the last four in. So, like, maybe if you want to quibble there, that's fine. But I didn't have an issue with any of the hosts. I know TCU was disappointed that they didn't get one, but they didn't win their league's regular season or their tournament, right? And whereas, like, Oregon got one over them, and Oregon won their league in the regular season, got to TCU lost in the conference finals, or the finals of the conference tournament. Like, there are a couple of teams that are like that. Georgia Tech won the ACC regular season. They're not a host. They're a little bit salty about that. I understand. But because these conferences are so massive now, I mean, there's 16 teams in the ACC. There's 14 in the Big 12. 17 in the Big 10, 16 in the SEC, there's a really unbalanced schedule for the 30 conference games. And Georgia Tech played one of the softer schedules. And so that ended up impacting them in the committee's mind, because they didn't beat as many good teams as some of the other host candidates. So I didn't really have issue with it. I think they did a pretty good job balancing them out. And I can't tell if that's because the committee just was really good at balancing things, or if that's because the difference between like the best or second best team in the country this year and the 30th or 35th best team in the country this year is smaller than it has been in the last several years. It kind of feels like that's the case, that there isn't, you know, Vanderbilt's the number one overall seed. I don't think, based on, even though their offense got better as the year went on and they played very well, what did they win, 19 games in the SEC?
Right.
Like, I don't think that there's a lot on that. When you watch Vanderbilt, it makes you go, man, like, that's the team that's going to win the national title.
So when we are looking at the regionals and all the schools, other than your regional that you're calling in Athens, what are some of your favorite regionals based on potential matchups?
Yeah, I think the UCLA regional is really interesting.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Irvine. I think they're as good a team as I've seen all year, if not the best. UCLA has two legit draft prospects for next year, Roman Martin and Rokchalowski, who Rokchalowski is a candidate for the Golden Spikes Award as a sophomore. Arizona State, and Chalowski, by the way, is a Phoenix area kid, and ASU is back in a regional for the first time in 3 years. And while they, as Willie Bloomquist put it, they double bogeyed 18 and had to sweat it out as to whether or not they'd be an at-large. It's a really talented team with two very good starters. They feel a little bit more talented than a typical three seed, although they have not been very consistent. So I would say that that's one that stands out as being really fun. I think the Oxford regional, at Swayze, which is a great hitter's ballpark with Ole Miss and Georgia Tech at it. Those are two teams that can run the ball out of the yard. That's a really fun one. And then I think that the Eugene regional is one that's really good. That to me is it's either that or Hattiesburg that you'd call the group of death. Oregon you know, wins the co-championship in the Big Ten. You know, they've been to super regionals the last 2 years. They lost game three of a home super to Oral Roberts 2 years ago. They haven't been to Omaha. They've been close. And they get the Big 12 tournament champion and one of the best pitching teams in the country in Arizona, the Big West tournament champion in Cal Poly, who won 41 games this year and finished with a top 30 RPI, and Utah Valley, that's always a good program. They won the WAC tournament. So Oregon didn't really get done any favors, nor did Southern Miss and Hattiesburg. I mean, they've got Alabama and Miami in that as well as Columbia. And Columbia, like the Ivy League teams tend to be frisky. Columbia's pretty good. So those are the ones that I would say are the most competitive. That Oregon regional to me, the one in Eugene is the one I have circled, is the one I think is the toughest.
Yeah, I'm with you, because I was going to ask you, what's the region of death? And yeah, it's Eugene. When you got three top 30 RPI schools in the same region.
Yeah.
Good luck, Oregon. I'm glad you mentioned Los Angeles, the UCLA region. That's going to be chaotic. Like there's going to be a lot of chaos out west. It may go chalk in the southeast, but if you're looking for chaos watching postseason baseball, it's going to be those out west games in Eugene, Oregon, and Los Angeles. And a matchup that I'm really interested in, depending on how they set up their pitching rotation, a North Carolina, Oklahoma potential matchup. If Oklahoma can get Kyson Witherspoon on the mound, that could be tricky for North Carolina. That will not be an easy one. They may have to, if they were to lose that game, win their home regional through the loser's bracket.
Yeah.
Still very feasible. But those are some of my favorite matchups. And of course, Tennessee and Wake Forest, that could be a great matchup as well. After the opening games.
Yeah, so a couple things on those. I mean, one, North Carolina, I think, is the most complete team right now. You know, they were ranked number one to end the season in D1Baseball.com. They're the number five overall seed. They can really pitch. They have a dynamic offense. They have the ACC Pitcher of the Year in Jake Knapp, who's going to be one of the best senior signs in the country. He was outstanding this year. He got comped to me by a current ACC coach as Lance Lynn when Lynn was at Ole Miss, and it's the perfect comp for him. He's just this 6'5", 270-pound strike thrower that pitches off his fastball. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound at all like Lance Lynn? Yeah. Right? So, like, I mean, he's really good. And while Oklahoma has this really talented rotation with the Witherspoon twins, Kyson and Malachi, they can't afford to throw off because Nebraska is a very experienced team. They're like, Nebraska isn't the most athletic team, but they're physical. They're old. They're really smart. And so I think, you know, Oklahoma, we probably get robbed of that potential matchup of Knapp and Witherspoon because of that, because I can't imagine that they're going to throw anyone other than Kyson Witherspoon in that first game. I just think North Carolina is really good. I think that's going to be a difficult spot for them to come through. The Tennessee Wake one is really interesting because Wake is as talented a team as there is in the country. And they have, I mean, the number of quality arms that they have is ridiculous. But there's two things that they don't do particularly well. They don't throw enough strikes, right? They walk a lot of guys. Yeah. Their strikeout to walk ratio is really good because they're like strike out 30% of the hitters that they face, but their walk rate's really high. And they play poor defense. And they're going to have to face Cincinnati, who is an interesting team. Jordan Bischel's the head coach there. He had been at Central Michigan and built a really good program there. Jordan Bischel's a guy that likes to play the inside game. So college baseball, bunting is still a positive offensive play, not because people are always looking away, give away outs, because they want to make 19-year-olds field them. And Wake's defense has been shaky all year. And to me, Cincinnati puts a lot of pressure on Wake Forest because of that. And that I'm really curious to see. That would rob us of that. If Wake were to get through and to play Tennessee, you're right. Their pitching staff has the stuff to be able to beat Tennessee. But they have to get through Cincinnati. And Cincinnati style of play, like we saw what they did to Duke early this season. That's a really good Duke team. Swept them on the opening weekend because they just, like, Duke was not ready for that kind of game defensively. And Duke has a better defensive team than Wake does.
Tennessee's been struggling too defensively. Yeah. They have a lot of questions, especially on the left side of that infield.
Well, and here's the other thing. It's like, let's play this out, like this fantasy out, right? Cincinnati wins that game and they face Tennessee, and they're going to have to face Marcus Phillips probably, who's a really talented arm, but Marcus Phillips does not hold base runners. And like that
does Liam Doyle.
At least Doyle's left-handed, right? So like if you're in that spot where you either have to face, you know, they probably will go Phillips in game one and Doyle in game two. They'll probably throw off. Miami of Ohio is okay, but they're not great. And so a lot of times what you'll see is the number one seeds will save their ace for the second game. But that to me is like, that's a real possibility that you could get into a track meet with Cincinnati, who is going to put a lot of pressure on your defense.
So let's take a look at the top eight seeds, because in recent years, one of these top eights, they don't make it to the super regionals. They get upset and it shocks the college baseball world when it happens. But Mike, we know that the chances of this happening again are pretty high.
Yeah.
So when you look at the top eight seeds, who is at most at risk of not advancing to super regionals?
So I'm going to leave my regional out of this because I think it's because it's. I think it's up for grabs, but I also don't want to make a claim on anybody in games that I have to call. I just I feel very uncomfortable doing that. But I think the couple that are interesting to me are the Auburn Regional. That's a young team. They're really talented. They have a great hitter and Ike Irish in the middle of their lineup. Butch Thompson's done a tremendous job this year. They played the toughest schedule in the country. But, you know, Central Connecticut State's been in for the last six regionals, got experienced guys. Stetson's a pretty good team. And I really like this NC State squad, and they can pitch. They have very good starting pitching and they have an outstanding bullpen. So I think that's a dangerous regional with Auburn there as a top eight seed. Texas, I don't know how vulnerable they are in regionals, but when they lost Jared Spencer for the year, they lost a guy who was, I thought he was the best pitcher I saw this season, even as a senior. I mean, it was like the Josh Hader starter kit. And they lost their Friday guy. And they had played most of the year without Max Ballou, who last year was the Big 12 player of the year. Now, he should be back for regionals, but we don't know what his timing should be like. So they feel a little shorter than what Texas normally does. And despite the fact that they got off to this incredible start in league and won the SEC regular season, they don't have that same kind of there's not the same kind of feel of the talent there that you would normally think about with an SEC team that wins it. They have an amazing coach. Obviously Jim Schlossnagel works magic wherever he goes. And I don't think it's out of the realm possibility that Texas gets to Omaha. I just think that they're a little bit more vulnerable just because of the injuries that they've had.
Yeah. The one that I have, Corvallis out in Oregon State, they're the eighth seed. That's going to be tough for them. I also have Arkansas. I don't know what it is about regionals, but they have like the worst luck in Fayetteville. Yeah. Last year, they forgot to hit. And Kansas, decent squad. Creighton is sneaky here. Like, that's the one that I'm circling. Like, a Kansas-Creighton game, first of all, is going to be fantastic and entertaining. But Arkansas cannot look past Creighton if they win that opening game against Kansas.
Yeah. I mean, Kansas is going to throw Dominic Voegeli in that game, who is one of the best pitchers in the country. So, I think Kansas poses a threat to Arkansas. I get what you're saying. I mean, I was there 2 years ago when TCU beat them. You know, Trey Richardson had the three homer, 11 RBI, yeah, two grand slam game against them. It was unbelievable. And TCU ended up going to Omaha and being in the Final Four there. So like Arkansas, you're right, has had this kind of bad home luck. I'm not sure that it's the toughest regional for them. I disagree with you full out on Oregon State. I think they're clearly the class of that regional.
Really? I know TCU over
felt
TCU?
Like they had a case to hope. Yeah, TCU's banged up. No Carson Bowen, who is a really good catcher. I know that they're going to be a little bit chippy, but Oregon State hasn't gotten a lot of attention because they haven't played any of their games on TV because they're playing as an independent this year. I had a chance to see them early this year. They have a ton of quality arms. Their lineup is really good. Ivar Arquette is probably, I would guess at this point, going to be the first college bat, yeah, off the board. He's a 6'5 shortstop who can play the position. They have a ton of pop up and down the lineup. I think that Oregon State team is pretty good. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I think it's great. This is crazy to think, but it's been 10 years since Southern Cal was in a regional, right? Like, they haven't been in a regional since 2015. St. Mary's is going to be literally a fight. Like, Eric Valenzuela, the head coach there, is a former Golden Gloves boxer. Both of his teenage boys are boxers. Like, St. Mary's will not give any ground. Like, that's eval. That's his. That's kind of his reputation. That's who he is. He is unbelievably tough. He's a great dude, great coach. But I really think that Oregon State team is poised to run through that regional. And then, you know, we'll see what happens when they get to Supers. They would be paired up with a Florida State team that has, despite the star power of Arnold and Lodice and the freshman Miles Bailey, who's incredible, they've got a really questionable bullpen. And so, like, that would be a very, very big challenge for Florida State. So I think Oregon State is an awfully good team overall.
So then who is your upset pick to win a regional? So someone that's not a number one seed, who do you like of the 2, 3, or 4s to win a regional, move to super regionals?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Irvine for me is
that was number one on my list.
I think they're really good. I like NC State at Auburn. I think that's a one that has a chance. I think there's a chance that Coastal could be, listen, if it's Florida, like, I think Kevin O'Sullivan's won like 7 straight super regionals if he gets to the Florida coach. And like, that's a team that, you know, what do they start, 1-11 in league this year?
Yeah, they were.
And they
bad.
Ended up making the tournament, and they've had a ton of injuries. I don't know how they're keeping it together, but Coastal, I think, is vulnerable. ECU is just a little bit young. Normally, we talk about them as an at-large team. They had to win their conference tournament to get in. So that's one that I look at where there could be somebody outside of that group. I think Eugene, I think Arizona is capable of winning that regional. I think, Southern Miss. I mean, there's a lot of these this year because, again, like, the difference between 1 and 35 in terms of the quality of talent isn't quite what it has been the last several years. So, you know, again, that doesn't mean that it won't be chalk. But I think that those are some of the spots where I would look at and go, yeah, there's a chance for an upset in the regional.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of the ones that I have. Irvine, Arizona, I have winning that regional. I have Alabama, but again, that's, as you mentioned, Southern Miss is the 16th seed. I have Alabama winning that regional. And we'll see what those super regional matchups are.
Alabama is really interesting, too, because of Justin LeBron, yes, who might be the number one overall pick in next year's draft. Not that Sox fans need to be looking ahead to that or anything.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know if you get the same odds the Rockies will, but
no, well, the Rockies don't qualify.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They've been in the penalty twice in a row, right? You're in the lottery two in a row.
So they're literally in the White Sox position this year. Yeah, they can't pick higher than 10th next year.
Great ballpark, though.
Great ballpark. So obviously we don't know what the super regional matchups are, and we'll see how the regionals unfold. But Mike, which teams are you, if you had to make a guess right now, and not a prediction, let's call it a guess. We got a lot of postseason baseball ahead of us. But if you had to guess right now before regionals start, who are the two teams that you would pick to play in the College World Series in Omaha?
Well, I think I would take North Carolina. I think North Carolina is a team that I think they've got a path. Although a North Carolina Oregon Super Regional would be pretty great. Like that would be some terrific theater at Bochmer in Chapel Hill. So I think North Carolina has a really good chance. I think on the other side, LSU's path through the regionals is probably the cleanest. You know, if they pair up with Clemson, Clemson plays defense really well. They have about five arms that they seem to trust. They're not as power-laden a Clemson team as we've seen in the past. But they get on base. Chicago guy in the middle of that, Dom Listy, started his career at North Central as their left fielder. He's been the best on-base guy in the ACC this year. He was at North Central and then Indiana State, and he's there now. So I think that's a spot that I would look at. I would say probably LSU and North Carolina are the favorites, although I still think UC Irvine's got a really good chance. I think so highly of Ben Orloff and that program. And I just think that they're not like most mid majors. They're much more physical. Mm-hmm. I talked to a scout about them and he was like, man, you know, they've got a lot of guys that this is an organization that uses the ABC scouting. So he said, they got a lot of D's, which sounds like it's a pejorative, but basically it's like, they've got a lot of guys that are going to play professional baseball as organizational players. And they're really deep in that regard. And then they have McCombs, their center fielder, who's a sophomore, has some tools. But Colin Yeaman, who's their shortstop, can just really hit. Anthony Martinez has been one of the best players in the Big West. He's more kind of like a Sean Casey type of first baseman than he is a slugger. And they have a good rotation, and they have the best reliever in the country in Ricky Ojeda. I think Irvine wins that regional, and I think if they faced up against Texas, I think Texas would have their hands full with them.
Yes.
I do not think that that team would be afraid for a second to go to Dish Falk to take them on. I think that's a really tough team. I love Irvine's squad. I want to see the Eaters. The Eaters got to eat, right?
Yeah.
So Eaters got to eat is one of their hashtags. So I think there's my sleeper for Omaha. If a two seed can be a sleeper, it's Irvine.
So I'm with you on an SEC versus ACC College World Series. I also have LSU making it to the College World Series. I do like Florida State. I think one theme that we're going to find out is not every team has three dependable starting pitchers. So we'll get into the bullpen, which you are right, Mike. Florida State does not have a good bullpen, but I do think that that offense can take advantage of other schools' bullpens. We're going to see some really high scoring games when Florida State plays, like 12-8 type of games, but they definitely have the bats to take advantage in those third games, especially if they get to Omaha. So I just like their offense enough to make it to the College World Series. And I'm actually going to ride the Seminoles they're my pick to win the national championship this year over LSU.
Finally, Florida State wins the national championship. How long has it been? They've never won.
Most appearances
without ever winning the national championship.
There you go.
I mean, so
kiss of death, Florida State. I apologize. You won't make it out of regionals now.
the thing that concerns me about their offense is that there's a fair amount of chase there.
Yeah.
And if you can kind of work them backwards a little bit, you can have some success. Now they're potentially facing Northeastern in the 1-0 game in the regional. Northeastern is the hottest team in the country. They've won 27 straight games. They have the best ERA in the country. Now, they've been playing in the CAA, which isn't exactly the ACC in terms of offensive prowess. But they're a pretty good team, and I'm very curious to see how they would use Florida State's aggressiveness against them. Northeastern's head coach is Mike Glavin, who's Tom Glavin's brother. They're a very good program. Like, that's not an easy – they didn't get the easiest draw. Mississippi State's got some talent there, too.
Yes.
But you're right. Like, Joey Vellini, who was maybe the most consistent starter for Florida State for the first – I'd say 10 or 11 weeks of the season, has scuffled down the stretch. And that's kind of to be understood. He's a transfer from USF. He had Tommy John surgery. He hadn't been a starter before this year. It's about Arnold and Wes Mendez, who has probably better overall stuff, I would say, than Arnold. He's going to be a name to watch for next year's draft. He's a transfer from Ole Miss. He's a really good arm. They have three lefties that they can run out in the rotation. But it's like they've got to get somebody hot in the pen, like whether it's Joe Charles, who's a senior, or the sophomore John Abraham, who probably has the best stuff, or Peyton Prescott, who throws 100. Like, somebody in that Florida State pen has to get hot. They're going to have to ride a hot relief hand at some point, and they just haven't found that guy yet. And that was one of the issues that they had in Raleigh this week, or in Durham this week, I should say.
Well, we'll see just how close our College World Series picks are. But this is one of my favorite times of the year, the NCAA postseason play. Again, you can watch all the action, the ESPN family of networks. They even have their own Red Zone type of channel as well. Mike Rooney will be on there. I don't think Rooney goes to sleep, right?
No. I mean, Rooney hasn't gone to sleep since the conference tournament started. So I've had to tape two shows with him this week, and I'm not sure he's a zombie. But listen, what you said, we call it squeeze play, right? And it's on ESPN Plus, and sometimes you'll see it on linear. It is worth the price of an ESPN Plus subscription. It is the best way to watch the college baseball tournament. If you're not familiar with it at all, I mean, listen, like, do you really care what the White Sox are going to do this weekend? This is a great way to watch baseball, like, basically from 11 a.m. to midnight Central Time, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and catch all of the action. I know we all get excited about the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the women's basketball tournament, and the one-and-done nature is great. But the baseball championship is so much fun because it is double elimination in the first round. And because there are no bad seasons that end in Omaha, if you're in the final eight, you have had a great season.
Yes.
We know how fickle baseball can be. And just like getting to a place that can only be described by one word, this Omaha. It's the 75th anniversary, or the 75th year, I guess, that the Men's College World Series has been in Omaha. 1950 was the first. Texas won that one. So it is synonymous with college baseball. It's a great event if you ever get a chance to do it. You know, it's only, what, an 8-hour drive from Chicago. And then if you're out further west, it's a lot easier. It's not a bad place to fly into. It is terrific for kids. If you have kids, like, college baseball is a lot of fun. It's a different beast than pro ball, right? There are a wide variety of offenses. There are a lot more mistakes, but the emotions run higher just in the same way it does in all college, in college football and college basketball. It is really fun, and there's nothing better than regional weekend. And using that squeeze play on the ESPN Plus, on the ESPN app, is the best way to watch everything.
Again, you'll be able to listen to Mike. He'll be calling the Athens games. Who are you paired with?
Jensen Lewis, my longtime friend and colleague. So, yeah, we had the Tucson Regional together last year. So Gabby Sanchez has been my partner most of the year, and I absolutely love Gabby. He's going to be in Hattiesburg with Tom Hart. So Jensen and I will be doing that. So that'll be a lot of fun because it's we've got an unbelievable crew, just like an A-plus crew that we have. So it'll be great. And we'll be on, I think we've got 11 a.m. Friday. We'll be on SEC Network for Georgia Binghamton and ESPNU at 5 o'clock Central for Duke and Oklahoma State that night. So those are the only ones I know of where they are other than the app, but we'll be on linear TV for both of those. So
again, you can follow Mike. He's on Blue Sky. He's MikeFerrin.bsky.social. You can also follow him on Twitter. He's at Mike_Ferrin. Listen to him this weekend. Call the action. And when he's not calling college baseball, again, you can hear him on SiriusXM, both on the MLB Network and the college sports channels, channels 84 and channel 89. Mike, as always, thank you so much for hopping on the Sox Machine podcast and previewing the upcoming college baseball postseason.
Josh, it is always a pleasure. It's great to see you. Happy to do it.
That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can listen to this show and watch our other videos, including MLB draft videos of select prospects, on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. Yes, we are on Blue Sky. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh or on Blue Sky at josh.soxmachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox, Major League Baseball, college baseball, and the upcoming draft, sign up at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you an ad-free version of both the podcast and the website, gains full access to all of our coverage, and unlocks the comment section for you. We also have additional tiers of support in which you earn additional benefits. We still have some spots open in our Veterans Committee, which gets you in a group chat along with the other VC members, and have direct access to our B reporter, James Fegan, who loves to share gossip and whispers of what he's hearing within the White Sox clubhouse. Again, go to SoxMachine.com to sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.